Welcome, everyone, to another broadcast of Authors First on the Artists First Radio Network. Scott Z in Studio 1A tonight. For tonight's our Thursday evening Authors First broadcast, we have a returning author coming back from, I think she was on with us earlier in this year. This is broadcast is airing live on July 12th, 2018. I believe our guest was on with us this past January. You know what? I like this guest already. Why? Because I am a huge animal lover. Many of the patrons of this station are as well. You hear us run lots of animal rights, animal welfare, big cat rescue advertisements. We do it absolutely free on behalf of these organizations because we love animals. Having said that, we have our guest is a huge animal lover. She's written books about a couple book series. Let's not jump ahead. Let's welcome our guest, and we'll get into that in just a moment. Welcome, Pamela Follin. Nice to have you back.
Thank you for having me. Great to be back.
How are things in Texas tonight?
Well, we're having a rain and thunderstorm going across us right now, but it's been going good.
Well, that's this time of year, I guess. Yeah, and, you know, people complain about the heat, but all winter long, we bitch about how cold it is. You know, I like the heat. Nothing wrong with that. And you know what? I'm not shoveling snow. Do you get snow in the part of Texas you're in?
Occasionally. If we do, it usually comes and goes within 24 hours. I mean, it'll stay on the ground very short time.
Okay. So the answer is no, pretty much.
Pretty much.
Yeah. We get snow, and then you see the grass, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 months later, it's all gone. But well, let's talk a little bit about you as an individual. Some listeners are not going to know about you. Some may have heard your previous appearance on the station. But tell us about Pamela Follin. You grew up in Texas. Tell us about your childhood.
Yeah, I grew up in Plano, Texas, which is just north of Dallas. And all my life, and I went to the University of Texas at Dallas and got a Bachelor of Science in Biology and a minor in Business. And I have loved animals and the pets in my life from the time I was very, very young. As a child, I was always finding birds and bringing them home to wanting to save them all, and now that I have a house of my own, I have my own menagerie of pets that are my family. I love them to death and have rescued and bottle raised an abandoned litter of kittens and had a dog, Sunny, that was an amazing dog that was able to read, which is the basis for my new series. So it's been a big influence on my life. I've worked in as a dog trainer in pet hotels and pet resorts for 10 years, and I'm certified to teach pet first aid and CPR. So have lots of great ideas and lots of great true-to-life stories that are great influences for my writing.
Well, we're going to get into that. Yes, you heard her right. She said her dog could read. Just put that in the back of your mind for a minute, folks. We'll get to that in just a moment. I do love the story about Megan's Munchkins, about the fact that you found a litter of kittens and you kept them all. Good for you.
Yes, I did.
And being a cat lover, at one point I've had 11 cats at once. We currently have regular listeners to the station will know that we found out mountain biking, oh my goodness, it's going to be 8 years ago next month, out mountain biking in the middle of nowhere, someone had thrown out two tiny, tiny kittens. And they were just sitting there along the trail waiting to be eaten by the next hawk that flew by. Well, they have lived here, Mia and Maya and Mo, that's two cats, Mia and Mo. They have now lived here at the radio station for, it will be 8 years coming up. They have a great life here. They are very much loved, have free reign of the place. This place belongs to them. There are 5 raccoons that live upstairs. The station is a 2-story building, and we've pretty much had to, at the moment, surrender the upstairs to the raccoons. We're trying to trap them all at the same time. It's a family. And we're trying, see, in the state of Ohio where we are, if you call animal pest control, by law, they have to kill them. We don't want them to die. We want them to be taken out and let go. Anyway, okay, so enough about, we're big, we like stuff like this around here. And, you know, the fact that you knew as a child that you had this love for animals, I think looking back now, would you say that we can tell there are some people that are very cruel to animals? That's the way they've always been. Do you know anybody like that? I mean, it's hard to be around folks like that. But I, you know, when I growing up, I saw people who were just very, very cruel to animals. And you know what? I bet they're still cruel to animals and people today. I wonder if you're born with that love for animals. What do you think?
I don't know. I think part of it is born and part of it's being taught the correct way to, you know, approach and handle animals. That's one of the things I do in my talks I give to local parent groups is talk about the five things that you can use the pet as a training tool to teach your children. Responsibility and compassion, and what better gift than to get unconditional love of a pet in return. So that's really a great reason to use for me to think to use the pets as a teaching tool for parents so that their children will learn responsibility and confidence and all those good things.
That's brilliant. Pets, you know, dogs, cats, they have much shorter lifespans than humans. Every animal I've ever had live with me taught me something. Many of them died in my arms at old age, and some died of illness, but they died with me. And you learn a lot when you lose a loved one like that. You know, I don't care if it's a dog or a cat or a goldfish or a human
right.
being. You know, I mean, you learn things. A child learns that things die. Anyway,
yeah.
Okay. Well, tell us about the rest of your family. Did you come from a big family, small family, or?
I have a younger brother and grew up half a mile away from my grandparents. So, my parents are the best parents in the world and have supported me in every endeavor I've ever wanted to do and have been a big help as I have been publishing books now for the past couple years.
What a great benefit to have a loving family and backing you up. And fantastic. Are there any other artists in your family line of any kind?
No.
It's going with you. All right. Well, good place to start then. I noticed, like you said, your degree was in biology. That's a tough subject.
Yeah, it is, and it was one of those things I said I declared I wanted a biology degree first year of college, thinking that it was animals, because the high school biology was more about animals than the biology degree that I ended up obtaining from UTD. Was more about petri dishes and pipettes and microscopes and fungus, and I really should have changed majors, but I was stubborn and determined to finish what I started, so I stuck with it.
Well, and, you know, it also demonstrates you can't be some subjects, let's put it this way, because I get enough hate mail the way it is, some subjects are easier to get through in college than others, and biology is a tough one. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So let's talk about now your writing career. You said you've been writing for a couple of years. What started you, you know, how did you arrive at the idea, hey, I'm going to start writing some books?
I've been writing short stories and journaling and writing as a hobby since I was very, very young. When I first found the kittens, well, I call them kittens still, but they're 5 years old.
You always
crazy. The kittens, I thought, hey, this would be a good story idea just because it's that ultimate amount of work you have to do to raise a pet and to care for a pet. I mean, a newborn kitten is about as close to a baby as you can get. And so I had it in the back of my mind to do a story about a child finding and bottle raising a litter of kittens. And kind of played with it. Of course, at the time, I was way too busy doing bottle feedings every 4 hours to do much with it. But then I guess it was about 3 years ago after Sunny, the dog that could read, passed away, I really used writing as my emotional outlet because that was a tough loss for me to handle. He and I were very, very close, and he could read. I mean, I've never seen a dog that responded to tricks the way he did. So then it really became a driving force for me, wanting to get the stories out there, and I started with creating the Megan's World series, and Megan's Munchkins was the first book that came out last fall. But as I kept working on that one, I decided there has to be a way. In fact, my parents and I were talking about at the kitchen table one day. We were saying there has to be a way you can write a story about Sunny, because I always wanted to be able to make a book about Sunny. He was such an incredible dog. So we were just kind of talking back and forth, saying, well, there has to be a way we could explain why Sunny was so smart, because we said he was a human in a furry body. And so anyway, I kind of let that roll around in my brain for a couple of days, and I came up with the Sunny the Wonder Dog series, Sunny from Outer Space being the first book in that series. And it is, Sunny had to be an alien, come to Earth. That's why he was so smart. And so that's the premise for Sunny from Outer Space. An alien comes to Earth and disguises himself as Sunny the Shih Tzu and has to learn how to adapt to not being allowed to say anything other than woof.
That would be tough. It's an interesting premise. What age group did you write these books for?
The Sunny the Wonder Dog series is for the preschool and kindergarten age crowd. It's a picture book.
They're picture books. But I'm looking at them right now. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to. Our guest is Pamela Folland at a.com. Her name is her website. Imagine that. Pamela Folland, F-O-L-A-N-D. And surf on over, and you can look at all the stuff we're about to be talking about. Before we get to Sunny the Wonder Dog, I'm looking at a picture of Megan's Munchkins, and there's, I think there's four kittens on the chair. Is that the real crew? Are those the real Munchkins?
That is the real Munchkins that I raised. They were 5 years old, or 5 weeks old when I took that picture.
Wow, that brings back memories. I raised a litter. In fact, I had a cat pass away 2 Sundays ago, 22 years old. He was the last of a litter of four that was born in my bedroom and lived his life on my property at my home, and just died at age 22. His mother, they all lived to be 17 or older. That's tough. And they teach you, as I said before, you learn a lot about life when you're close to animals. Now, people, if you're a listener and you have never had a relationship with an animal, an understanding with an animal, you're missing out. You're missing out on a huge portion of life. An animal is not just an object. It's not a possession. It's a being. It has feelings, memories, likes, dislikes, gets mad, gets happy. You shouldn't treat it like an ashtray, but what a... I like the little gray one on the right hand side of that picture. Looks like Mia here. Now, what's the male female makeup? How many boys and how many girls?
3 boys and 1 girl.
Oh, poor girl. And they all have unique... And did you, have you noticed, have you ever raised a family? Cats are communal animals in the wild. They live in groups. They're very, you know, social animals. I cringe when I see somebody, a person that has one cat that lives alone like that, you know, without the other company of cats. Have you noticed the interaction because they are family?
They are, and it's hysterical that they're from the same litter. They all have their own personalities, but this is my first time. Growing up, we had one cat and one dog, and guinea pigs and gerbils and all sorts of other animals, but we always only had one cat and one dog. And so this is my first time seeing what multiple cats do on a day-to-day basis in a household, and they are very social creatures.
They have unique personalities. Each one of them has a unique personality, just like human beings. They're not cookie yes. cutters, ladies and gentlemen. They're actual beings. Some are ornery as hell. Zucifer, I had a nickname for one of my cats, like Lucifer. I called him Zucifer. He was rotten, but he was lovable. But he just did stuff to his brother, you know, kind of like an ornery, you know. You know what I'm saying. We all know kids like that. Fantastic. Now, because it's a picture book, it's a little different. And because you're writing for a younger audience, it's a lot different than trying to put together a romance novel. Where do you start? You start with the pictures first. Of course, you got a story. How did you put it together?
I started with the story because I was coming off of writing the middle grade series, which are about 120 pages a piece, 25,000 words. So to condense a storyline down into under 3,000 words was a challenge for me. To get all the dialogue, to get all the scenes in there, to make the story live independent of the pictures. That was probably the hardest thing for me. And then once I had the storyline down and it flowed and it told the story through another independent author friend of mine, and was very fortunate to work with Jubadai. She was wonderful and gave her the descriptions of what I wanted each picture to be, and put it together. And it's an amazing book. I know from doing the markets and different event book signing events with it the last couple weeks since its release last month, its cover and the illustrations definitely draw children and adults in to the booth and to the table. So it's exciting.
Yeah, we'll talk about the business side of being an author in a bit. That's often the side of authorship that beats people down, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. Folks, if you're just joining us, Pamela Folland is back with us. She has a new book out, Sunny from Outer Space, the first in the new Sunny the Wonder Dog series. There's actually a separate website for that, sunnythewonderdog.com. If you want to surf on over there, you can actually see Sunny. Sunny was a real dog. This is a real companion. It's a Pamela Folland. You can see the picture. I believe it's pronounced Shih Tzu, right? Is that the breed of dog?
Yes.
Little purse dogs, in other words. This one lives about two houses down the street. Adorable little thing. How can you not fall in love with a dog like that? Come on.
Right.
Now, how did you come across? How did you end up being in the same company with Sunny? How did you meet Sunny?
Actually, the pet hotel that I was working at the time, it started off that a couple brought Sunny as a very young puppy, and the dog that was actually Sunny's father to the resort for training. And the dog that was Sunny's father was only like a year older, and the couple had very high-stress jobs to where coming home to two young dogs wrestling and running around, they decided was too much for them. So because I'd done training lessons with them, and pet sat for them across Christmas vacation. They asked me, would you be interested in owning Sunny? And, of course, I absolutely jumped and said, yes, I will be there in 5 minutes to pick him up. And so I got to have the privilege of owning Sunny from the age of about 6 months on, and I'd known him since he was only 3 or 4 months old.
So look at it.
It was definitely meant to be, that's for sure.
She looks like Sunny looks like a toy. Like a, yes. A plush toy. That's a real animal. Now, folks, I'm over at the official website of Sunny the Wonder Dog. In fact, that's the name of the website, sunnythewonderdog.com. If you click there, it'll take you to a separate website. Of course, there's Sunny sitting right there. You know, I was watching a program called Life After Humans. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It was a series on cable TV, Life After Humans. And they tried to project what the world would look like if all humans vanished, you know, in an instant from the face of the earth. And one of the things that jumped out at me was little dogs. They mentioned on the program that one of the first animals that would go extinct would be small dogs.
Yes.
Why? Because they don't exist in nature. I mean, there's dachshunds and stuff that are specially bred by humans, but small dogs like Sunny need human beings. They can't run in packs. They can't hunt down their food. They are absolutely in need of help to exist on this planet. And what's wrong with that? Go look at Sunny, folks, and tell me you wouldn't take that dog right now if someone offered it to you. What an adorable little creature. Now, how long do Shih Tzus normally live? What's an average lifespan?
Usually between 12 and 15 years.
Wow. It's tough. Some breeds of dog, my cousin's dog, a boxer, the lifespan of a boxer is like 9 years. That's it. They're fully, you know, I think it's because of the breeding. You know, Shih Tzus have been bred like most dogs have been bred for humans. Liking, but what an adorable little creature.
Yeah, unfortunately, Sunny got liver failure at the age of only just over 9 years old. So the age span doesn't really always hold true. And I've seen Great Danes live well past the age of their 8-year projected lifespan, and they live to 15. So just like humans, it's all in the DNA, I guess.
Yeah, it's luck of the draw as well.
Yep.
Had a cat get the equivalency of AIDS. What did they call that? Autoimmune disease a number of years ago. It was horrible. Yeah, his life was cut short tremendously. What would we do without pets, Pamela? Can you imagine a world without, you know, not just animals, you know, giraffes and rhinoceros. I mean, without pets.
I wouldn't be as happy in my house if I didn't have pets. I know that much.
I just can't imagine that.
I can't either.
Well, you did mention how things are going at the book signing, so I guess we can't do an interview about books and authors if we don't talk about the business side, sometimes the unpleasant business side of being a published author. How's it going for you? Are you comfortable at book signings? Are those fun events for you?
Oh, yes. They're absolute blast for me to do. The McKinney Farmers Market is where I've been most recently, and it's been great. It's in beautiful, historic downtown McKinney, which is just a little bit further north of Plano, north of Dallas, and it's a great community up there, and the people have been very interested in my books and wanting to talk to me, and I love talking to the families. I mean, you get a young child at the table, and one of the first things I ask them is, bring children to the table as well. They'll come up and they'll be pointing at the stuffed dog or the stuffed cat on the table. And so one of the first things I ask them is, do you have pets at home? And you always get the bomb at answers of, no, my daddy's allergic, my mommy's allergic, or no, they said no. When they say yes, then I say, well, do you like reading about pets? And, you know, kids are so blatantly honest, sometimes their answers are very amusing. No, I don't like to read, or, oh, I only like a specific, and they'll tell me, usually they tell me a video game. When they say they like something specific, it's kind of funny, but it's a great opportunity to get to talk to people. I had one young girl that bought the first book of Megan's World, Megan's Munchkins, and then came back and told me all about the book, was just so excited. She was repeating lines from the book and telling me the whole story.
Wonderful.
At the fair. So it was very exciting, very rewarding to get to see the excitement my stories can bring.
Yeah, that's rare. Not all authors get to see firsthand feedback from happy readers. And that's something that I bet you that little lady will remember that story the rest of her life.
Yes.
As most of us do, can remember those childhood stories. And that's great to have a positive impact with all the stuff our kids could be looking at in the world. It's wonderful to have stuff like Sonny the Wonder Dog and the Megan's Munchkins and, you know, positive stuff for kids to grow up on. I would like to throw this out. Some genius lady that we had on who, actually she was a musician, but this exact technique can apply to authors to help sell books. She claims that when she does a book signing like that or an event similar to that, when someone walks up to the table, she hands them a book and said, oh, here's my new book, and puts it in the hands of the person standing there. And she claims when she does that, she sells a huge number more books, a larger percentage of books, than she does not doing that, she claims, because once the book is in the hands of the prospective customer, the customer has to give it back to you, which is a form of rejection. So it's a way to use guilt to sell more books. Hey, we're here to help authors and bands, folks. That's what Authors First is all about. And if we can find ways to help folks sell a few more books, why not? You know, hey, just try that and see if it works. You know, why not?
I've tried that off and on. I learned that last summer at one of the book signings before I started attending and doing them myself, talking to other independent authors and seeing what they did when I approached their table. And so, yes, I can't say there's as big of success as she's talking about, but there is something to that. Handing it to the people definitely helps close the sale.
Hey, folks, and that's what's wrong with supporting the people who bring art into your lives, ladies and gentlemen? Where would the music come from? Where would all the beautiful things in life, the books, the movies, all the stuff? Somebody has to do it, and they deserve to be compensated for their efforts. So what was it like? Now, the very first book you got was one of the Megan's Munchkins books, which would have been book number one. And my question is, what was it like for you when the, you know, I don't know, maybe UPS showed up with a box and you opened it up and inside it was one of your books?
I still get excited every time I get a proof, every time I get a shipment of books. It's just a very surreal feeling. Makes me feel very blessed to have the career that I have and to be able to publish these books and show the world my love of animals and hopefully teach young readers about the correct way to interact with animals. But no, I still remember the first time I got one of the, well, it was Megan's Munchkins, my first book, proof in my hand, because I immediately took a picture of myself holding it and posted it all over social media.
Bravo. And you know what? There's a whole bunch of you folks listening out there. Come on, admit it. You wish you were, you want to write the book. You, in fact, many of you have a whole bunch of it sitting in the dresser drawer over there. Why not finish it? Finish it. A lot of people start books, but fewer finish it. And you could be doing So don't leave your book in the drawer for your relatives to find after you pass away, listeners. Get out there and get it done. Now, Pamela, once you're done, now, like you, God forbid, you know, at some point in time, the good Lord's going to take us all. But you know what? Your books are going to be around.
That's right.
A lot longer than we will be. And that's kind of wonderful that you're leaving something for future generations of children to enjoy. That's pretty cool.
Pretty humbling.
We are getting a little bit of dropout on your phone, but it's usually for a second or two. So let's just, folks, you know, hey, everybody talks on cell phones every day. Sometimes we lose a syllable or two here or there. Now, you want the independent route publishing, right?
Right.
Bravo. You get to keep control over everything. You know, some authors are very reluctant to do that. They demand some type of contract. They demand to have all their money taken away from them and handed to some fat sitting up there on Madison Avenue. But we are always supportive of independent bands and authors. Some people find that whole ordeal a bit daunting. But now, this is your fifth book, is that right?
Yes.
Four in the Megan, Megan series. Well, what advice would you give someone that's been hesitant about trying to dive into the independent publishing world in a few minutes? What could you tell them that would be helpful?
Read everything you can about it. That's what I did for months before I started publishing, to learn the ins and outs, because just like any business, it has various facets that, you know, when you think of creating a book, there was lots of things that hadn't thought of before. It's like, oh yeah, I need to know how to do that. And then realizing how many different hats you have to wear to be a self-publisher. I mean, you're the publishing company, you're the writer, you have to either know how to do or hire editors and proofreaders and reviewers, and then to do your own marketing and publicity and get yourself booked for book signings and talks and speaking engagements. There's a lot of things that you don't think of until you start reading about it and learning. And I still keep reading any new book that comes out on self-publishing, any article that comes out on the internet about it, because there's always something that you can take away from. I go to other independent authors' talks to hear and see how they do their events and their book signings, because even if it's something that is completely unrelated to what I'm writing about, you can still learn something from a way someone else does it.
And a word of caution, ladies and gentlemen, in the publishing world, book publishing world, and in the music publishing world, there are lots and lots of predators. People who will masquerade as being very helpful to independent authors and musicians, and really are only interested in taking as much money from you as they can. So do a research.
Right.
They are out there. I'm very familiar with the music world, been a professional musician for 41 years. They are out there by the droves. They will pounce on you. And anyway, so watch what you're doing. Watch your back. Like in any business venture, all right? You can open a car wash and get, you know, ripped off by your chemical supplier. So just do your homework and be diligent. This is not a business for the timid, is it?
No, not at all.
Now, being that you're is a picture book and for preschoolers and stuff, my question is heading towards ebooks and audiobooks. Let's talk about, audiobooks, is that a possibility for what you do?
Yes, absolutely. The Megan's World series is currently available on paperback and Kindle. The Sunny from Outer Space is right now only in paperback just because of its age bracket. I didn't think that 4 or 5, 6-year-olds are going to be being read to on a tablet, but then again, in a few years, that might change.
Well, and may. Yeah, ebooks, I can certainly, oh, come on, man. And kids today, they're born with a screen in their hand.
Yes.
You know, so, and what's wrong with that, folks? I read all my newspapers and all my books on my iPhone. What's wrong with that? Am I still reading? Of course I'm still reading. Now, audio-wise, right. I don't know. There might be I can certainly see where a parent is on an hour-long drive with some kids in the back seat, and I don't know, maybe there's an audio book or something. I don't know. Does a six-year-old listen to an audio book? Is their attention span held that long? I don't know. My kid's 35. That's been too long ago for me to remember that.
I don't know. I just met a very nice woman at the McKinney Farmers Market that is one of the audiobook voice recording artists that works through Amazon. So she was telling me more about the ins and outs of audiobook. But because I didn't have the means to record or get the books recorded right off, I was kind of holding off, and so I haven't done as much research as I need to before diving into the audiobook world.
We actually helped produce an audiobook back in the early 2000s. It took a long time. It was very difficult. Technology has moved forward in the actual production of these things, and we have been told now that if you do a little bit of internet research, back then, by the way, to put out an audiobook at a beginner's level was $4,000 to $12,000 just to get it done. That is nowhere.
Wow.
That is nowhere near the case anymore. If you look around, there are audio locations. I'm saying that wrong. There are people who will record your audiobook for you if you agree to share profits. And therefore, you don't have to cough up that huge initial expense. They're all over the place. We've had many authors come through here who have found people that do work in that exact fashion. So no out-of-pocket expenses, but, you know, it's only fair that you come to an arrangement and helps, you know, share in the profits in some ratio with those people. That seems a reasonable way to go about things. Before we leave this topic, I want to ask, you know, you were talking about your books available on Kindle. And, you know, is a kid going to be read to off of an iPad? Maybe so. Musicians came up with this idea. I wish I was smart enough to thought of this, but I didn't. Musicians are now putting their CDs, you know, which are going away, their music on CDs and flash drives, those little thumb drives, those little USB thumb drives. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
So when you go see a band play down the street and they got a table for sale of merchandise, T-shirts and stuff, well, they got their CD there and they got these thumb drives with their music on it. And, you know, most of them are silkscreen with the band's name on it, and they're a lot less expensive. You know, flash drives are usable. What do you do with a CD? You know, you take it home, you load it to your MP3 player, and you put the CD away and you never touch it again.
That's right.
Right? Same thing. You know, that was the old way with albums. I'm old enough to remember that. Well, these flash drives, they're cheap. You can get them for next to nothing. And you can make them one at a time. And you don't have to have the duplicating costs. And when the consumer is done using it, they have something. They put it on their keychain. They still have the flash drive with your name on it. Interesting.
Yep.
And they're so inexpensive. I think you can buy 100 of these things if you buy like the 1 gigabyte ones that nobody wants anymore. You can get them for like $1 a piece.
Wow.
And why not? Somebody comes up, hey, well, because you take it home, you put the USB drive in, and you display it on your TV for your kids. Anyway, it's just another way to help independent authors sell books. So if it helps somebody out there, that's what we're here to do. So have you found anything still on the topic of independent publishing? What's the worst thing you've come across so far in regarding that topic?
As far as being an independent author or?
The whole world of getting your books out there, you know, shipping costs ridiculous, production costs ridiculous. Is there something that you thought was a lot more challenging than maybe you had anticipated before you got into this?
Getting reviews for the books. to be posted on Amazon, that has turned into a much bigger time spender than I originally thought it was going to be. Just, you know, contacting the Amazon reviewers or asking them if they'll review the books. And then, you know, I've been very fortunate. I always have gobs of people saying, yes, I'll review it, I'll review it. But then you don't always get them posted. You end up spending day after day emailing the person saying, well, can you post the review? The book's about to be released. The book's about to be released. And kind of chasing the reviews down. So that's become a little bit more time-consuming than I originally thought. But I've been very fortunate. I haven't run into too many obstacles as an independent author. I've getting to do what I love, which is writing books and talking to people about my love of animals. And now with the picture book out about my beloved Sunny dog, I'm excited.
There he is sitting on the cover of, I'm looking right at it, folks. If you go over to Pamela Foland, FOLAND.com, you can see Sonny sitting there on his, it looks like he's operating his, is that his spacecraft he's in?
That's his spaceship, yes.
How do you come up with these ideas? Well, that's going to lead us to talk about what made Sonny such a very interesting dog, but holding that back for just a moment, how'd you come up with this idea? Well, wait, we can't, you can't separate those, can we? We can't, because the reason you wrote this book about Sonny was because he was so special. And yeah, there is no way to separate those questions. So let's delete that. All right, let's go to this topic. And folks, you got to look at it yourself. Now, let me tell you that if you go to the website, sonnythewonderdog.com, and you click on some of the videos, it will override the radio broadcast, and it will override the this archive if you're listening to it as an archive. So you may want to select those videos when you're done listening to the program. But Pamela, explain to a listener, if they went to that website and when you make the claim that Sonny can read, we're not kidding, folks, this is not a joke, it's not a story, tell them about that.
It was at the request. Sonny was, like I said, I got Sonny from a training client that I worked with. And so Sonny grew up going to doggy daycare and the training resorts with me. And when I taught training classes, he was my demo dog. When I was working with other trainers, he was the dog that I was using to learn how to teach an agility or a rally or whatever the new course was going to be. And so he was very, very well socialized, but he loved being with people, being with me or my coworkers, much more than he liked being with other dogs. And so he grew up in that environment, in that busy environment of the pet hotels and boarding facilities. So it was at the request of the training director at the boarding facility I was working at back in 2010, Pete and Max. She said, we have a big event coming up. We want you to do a trick demonstration with Sonny and talk to people about the resort. And it was in downtown Dallas Convention Center. And I said, okay. And Sonny knew the basic rollover, play dead, sit up, all those basic dog tricks. But my training director said, no, that's not going to draw a crowd. He's not good. I've seen him do it. His heart's not in it. We need something that's going to draw attention. Look up how to teach your dog to read on the internet and teach him that. And she lived out of town. So she said, you know, I'll come back in a couple of months and we'll work on it. Well, I looked up how to teach him to read, and I took it to a level that I couldn't have done it if he hadn't have loved this trick the way he did. So we took it beyond, I think, what's ever been taught to a dog, because he loved it. He loved doing his reading cards. And so I started off writing his name on an index card, and I taught him to touch my hand with the that was holding the card. And then I faded out the word touch, and I would ask him, what's your name, and cue him to touch the Sunny card, the index card that had his name written across it. And so that's how I started, and we did this night after night after night. And then I made it confusing on him. I wrote down another name. I wrote Scamp, another S name, on a second index card. And I held up both index cards for him and asked him, what's your name? And Sonny would hit the one that had his name written on it. And I could switch hands. I could change which card. It wasn't that it was always in the left hand or the right hand. I would switch back and forth on each card that he learned. But he must have been, the only thing I can say about how he did it is he must have been, must have had a photographic memory or something, because he could picture what that picture of those words looked like, and he knew his name looked like, S-O-N-N-Y, what that looked like compared to anything else. Because then I taught him what the next thing he learned was, what do you eat? And it was treats, not chews. Those were the two cards that I'd hold up, and he would always touch with his paw the hand that had the treat index card on it. And again, it was the word treat, T-R-E-A-T-S. And so he really, really picked it up, and I just kept building on it, to where I think in the videos I'm even holding up two of that are correct answer cards at the same time. So I may have Sunny and Treat in my hand for him and ask him, what's your name? And he knew to touch the one that said Sunny. And my dad was great. When we were doing his counting video, we shot the video from two different angles, because posting the videos on YouTube, we had lots of people saying, oh, he's picking up a cue, or she's giving him signals or something. We had lots of people scoffing that there's something fishy going on behind the camera.
Right.
And so we shot his counting to 10, because he learned what the number 1 through 10 looked like on the index cards. And I could ask him in any order, which one's number 4, which one's number 7, and he would hit the correct hand that held the correct corresponding index card. So that was real fun to shoot the video double angle to show. And I'm not quite sure how he does it, watching these videos now so many years later. And even back then, it was like watching him do it live. It didn't even seem like he was really looking at the cards so much as my face. And I wasn't, you know, winking at him or nodding my head towards the card or anything. So that's where the idea from Sunny from Outer Space came from, is I had to create a storyline that explained why Sunny was so smart. Why did he know so much? So that's what the first book in Sunny the Wonder Dog series shows, is Sunny is an alien that comes to Earth, disguises himself as Sunny the Shih Tzu, and tries to blend in as a dog on Earth, but he's an alien. He can talk. He can have a conversation in actual words, but yet he's reduced to only saying woof. So it was showing, it's kind of building up and showing the instant connection that he and 7-year-old Pamela have with each other, that instant relationship of Sunny wanting to do anything to please the little girl, because that's how Sunny was. He would have done anything for me. And we did the event at Dallas Market Hall, and I set him up on a folding chair, and he read his index cards, and he loved the applause. He loved the crowd. If he was not really, his heart was not into a performance, all I had to do was ask the crowd to cheer him on. As soon as they started clapping and cheering for him, he'd look over, oh, okay. And bam, he was in the zone. He was hitting those index cards and answering everything. And on his website, Sonny the Wonder Dog, you'll see I was on Good Morning Texas, the local TV program with him. And he did his reading cards for television show, on live television show, and nailed it. Did not miss a beat. And he had cameras and all sorts of cameramen and crew walking all around him. It was a completely foreign environment to him.
Yeah.
But he did very, very well. And he picked his bigger claim to fame is the fact that at the end of that program, Amy, the host that was interviewing me, handed me 2 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper. It was in January that I was interviewed, with 2 football helmets on it, each a football helmet on each of the pieces of paper. And she said, have him pick who's going to win the Super Bowl. You know, Sonny had never seen these pages before. He didn't know what I was asking, but I knelt down. I held the pages in front of him. Who's going to win the Super Bowl, Sonny? He hits the one helmet, and by golly, they won.
Well, yeah,
so he picked the 2011 Super Bowl winner.
Ask him what the Ohio State lottery number is going to be tomorrow.
We need a Ouija board to do that. Yeah. Unfortunately, he passed away 3 years ago. But
I'm sorry. You asked the question. I don't know what's going on there. And people say, well, what? It must be a trick. Okay, it could be a trick. But you know what? Maybe it's the obvious answer. Okay, the dog can't read like we can, but the dog understood. Because it's a smart, intelligent being. It's not a stupid ball of fur. It understands. It has on its level. And not only there's 2 things going on there, Pamela. It has to understand your question, right? You don't say which one. You know, I mean, the dog has to understand that you're asking it to do something in order to get this response. So now then it also has to figure out what the correct response is. So this is. For those of us who have grown up around animals and had a very close relationship with the animals, it doesn't surprise me. It's great, and you have it on film and everything, but, you know, animals are very smart. You just have to pay attention to them.
That's right. And he disproved the dogs can't see colors because he learned his colors. He learned his geometric shapes. My dad even made him physics equations. And laws of physics, and that was the most impressive one, because he didn't know what any of those symbols meant, and they were complicated laws of physics equations. So think of a photographic memory, being able to remember what that equation looks like, but he did, and he forgave me for putting the little graduation hat that I put on him to film that video. He was not a fan of being dressed up, but... He let me do it.
Yeah, they tolerate us human beings. Well, folks, you can see all this if you go to the SonnyTheWonderDog.com website. That's a separate website from PamelaFulland.com. You can see the videos of Sonny on SonnyTheWonderDog.com. We're running out of time for this broadcast, so you'll have to wait about another 4 minutes to do that because it will override the broadcast you're listening to now. Well, gee, near the end of these types of author shows, we often ask the author, what's next? I think I know what's next, but tell us.
I'm going to continue with Sonny the Wonder Dog series. I'm going to have a sequel to where Pamela and her mom and family discover that Sonny is smarter and he can read. He is going to be, touching and answering the little girl's homework questions and reading the newspaper and kind of giving away that he's not just an ordinary dog, but ultimately going to lead the series to where he does the same reading trick that Sonny does with the little girl in the book series. So it's going to be a fun series to continue writing and getting illustrated and commemorating what an incredible dog and incredible trick Sonny was able to do, and really, really displaying that almost psychic ESP connection that he and I had, because talk about pets not having feelings. I swear he knew what I was thinking or feeling before it even fully crossed my mind. I didn't have to verbalize it, and that's how my cats are, my dog is. Yeah. I mean, it's pets are really, really in tune to their human friends. If you're in tune to them and pay attention to how they're reacting, it's incredible.
Well, and, you know, pets aren't into everybody. They don't like everybody. Well, you know what? Maybe that dog doesn't like you. It doesn't care what you do. Maybe you don't feed it. You don't take care of it. Why should it come to you? You know, you see the guy running around the dog park endlessly screaming his dog's name. Dogs don't understand their names because he doesn't come when I call. Maybe he doesn't want to come until you call. You know, you need to have a relationship with your animals. You need to listen to them and pay attention. They may not be able to say words, but they can say a lot. A whole lot, if you take the time. And I did want to mention, I think it's great that the character in this new series with Sonny is named Pamela. That's great. It's a way for you to keep having an experience with Sonny for years to come.
That's right.
That's
had to do it. I couldn't change that when I started writing the series. Like, no, I've got to be... It's a picture book, so, you know, you have to write to the age group, so it couldn't be an adult. I had to make it a child teaching him, but still, I had to keep it my name.
That's cool. Animals will be... I wonder what happens. You know, we do a lot of spiritual shows. Some of the spiritual shows we do get to meet our spiritual friends in the next life. I certainly hope so. It'll be a hell of a reunion, I'll tell you that. We miss them dearly when they go, and we try to remember the good times that we had with them. Well, we're down to literally, we have about a minute and a half before we have to close up and Crime Beat gets underway. Pamela, what have we not brought up on the program? I want to make sure that anything, that we didn't leave anything out. Did we cover everything that you wanted to on this show?
Yes, definitely. You've said my website. I'll say it again, PamelaFolan.com. For all information on books and where I'll be doing book signings. And I'm also on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And thank you for having me on the show.
Well, you'll have to come back. And every time you have a book, we want to help you promote it. You're a friend of the family here. Artist First was built to help people exactly like you, Pamela. We had folks like you in mind when we started this company 22 years ago. Independent authors and independent bands deserve to be heard, and that's what this platform is all about. So please come back and see us whenever you're ready. We are at your disposal.
Thank you. I was happy to find you guys.
Well, you come back, darling. You have friends here. Ladies and gentlemen, that's all the time we have left. Crime Beat is coming up. It's the number one crime show on all of Wi-Fi radio. It'll be starting in about 30 seconds. After our theme music concludes, you might want to check it out and find out why so many people find that show so fascinating. Pamela, lead on, girl. We need more people in the world like you. This place would be a better place if everybody took care of animals and had a loving relationship with their pets like you do.
Yes, that's for sure. Thank you.
We'll see you when you're ready to come back. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. This is Z-Man signing off for this installment of Authors First on the Artist First Radio Network. Every show is archived, always has links to the authors that you hear on this broadcast, so it's easy to find the authors and support them and buy their books. All the links are there. Amazon links are there. Get out there, download a book, an ebook, buy a book, support this great author, and keep this whole series running, and we appreciate you folks for doing that. Pamela, be well. Come back when you're ready, darling. We'll see you then.
Okay.